Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, December the 1st. And welcome to our commentary. First day of December, last month of 2022. 2022 certainly flew by very fast, to say the least. Christmas is just a few weeks away. Well, today we're going to talk about Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and some remarks that she made. But before we get there, I want to direct you to a post that I have at the American Thinker about the last jobs report. It was not a good jobs report. And that is over at the American Thinker on the right-hand side, where we put where they post all of the different articles. And it's also in my blog or also on Twitter, if you wanna check that out. You know, I have a friend here in the area from Iran, and he was telling me something very interesting about what's happening in Iran. And this has to do with the men's soccer team, the Iranian men's soccer team that lost to the United States. And that's the reason the United States was able to get out of the group and qualify for the next round. But he was telling me that a lot of people in Iran were cheering for the Americans, not because they don't like their country. Of course, they love their country, but they don't like the government that they have. And they saw this team as a token team for the government. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what he was saying. And this ties into a story that came out today that many Iranians were cheering for the Americans. And, you know, I'm not surprised because, you know, the same thing happens to me. As many of you know, I was born in Cuba, and I came to the United States many years ago when I was a kid. And many times whenever Cuba and the United States play, I cheer for the United States, not because I'm not proud of being a Cuban, but simply because I see the Cuban government or the Cuban team as a part of the Cuban government. And I think many Iranians were probably feeling the same way, and they were cheering for the American team, at least back home, not the ones at the stadium. The ones at the stadium were obviously very passionate for their team. And by the way, their team put on a tremendous effort, particularly in the second half of the game. I mean, they almost tied that game, and that would have killed, of course, the American chances. A tie would have killed the American chances. The Americans only had one way out, and that was to win. So it turned out to be a great game for the Americans. And I think you got to salute the Iranians for putting up a lot of fight there at the end. But back home, a lot of people were cheering for the Americans. Again, not because they don't like their country. They just don't like their government. Well, let's talk a little bit about Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who was on television one day this week. And she was explaining the inflation problem as a result of Americans spending all this money that they have because the economy is so great. Well, no, that's not why we have inflation. But she does make one point, and that is that we flooded the market, or we flooded consumers over the last year or so with so much cash that a lot of that cash, you know, the spending because of that cash has in fact caused the inflation. But I wouldn't have put it the way the secretary put it. I would have put it differently. I would have said, look, we got to do something about the spending, because the spending is putting a lot of money in the hands of people, and that's inflationary. So I would have put it that way. I would have put it differently. But the way it came out and the way it's being reported, and I think correctly so, is that she was somehow blaming the American people for spending all this money because we're all so happy with the Biden economy. Well, that's not really true. And if you see the last jobs report, I think you see some real problems for the American economy over the next few months. Well, another court has put down the Biden program to bail out these college loans. And this may be the last straw. I don't really see this thing going up any further. What happened was that there was a judge, I think in Texas or somewhere else, who first struck it down, and then on appeal, it went to the Fifth Circuit, where all three judges agreed with the original judge. It's basically saying, this is not a presidential power. Canceling loans is not something that presidents get to do. That's not what presidents do. They can sign a new law. Congress can change the law, but that's never going to happen. I mean, less now that we've got a Republican Congress. So this is going nowhere, this thing with the college loans. And I think what I would like to see is that at what point are many young people going to begin to realize that this whole thing was nothing but first-class pandering to get them to vote Democrat in the last election. That's all that it was. They were just pandering for the youth vote, and they won. They got it. I mean, it worked from the standpoint of the election. The pandering really worked. I mean, if you look at all the stats, there's no question that young people voted for Democrats because of this, just like some women voted Democrat as a protest against abortion. But the abortion vote was nowhere near as powerful or as strong as the vote of the young people. And now I guess they're going to have to be told that this whole thing was a joke. And I got to tell you, I don't mean to sound cynical, but I think the administration had to know that this thing was not going to fly. They had to know that as soon as this thing got to a court, that a judge was going to say, you can't do this. You cannot do this. And that's right. They couldn't. But they got the electoral benefit out of it, which is what they were looking for. They wanted to put something in the minds of young people to get them to go out and vote. And they did. They did. But of course, now the young people are going to have to get the telegram or get the letter saying, your application has been denied because the president doesn't have the authority to cancel your loan. It'll be interesting to see how that goes over in many of these college campuses where they were organized and mobilized to vote just because of this. It'll be interesting to see how this goes over. Where there's a possibility of a rail strike, I understand that today it got to the Senate. It's starting to look more and more and more like the Senate will approve what the House had approved, and that they're going to get the president to sign something that will avert the rail strike. I don't know if that's going to fly, but that's what I think it looks like today. When I say fly, it could be challenged in the courts by the unions who are going to say, you know, the government cannot tell us what to negotiate or how to negotiate. But, you know, I think that what is driving a lot of these senators, frankly, and a lot of members of Congress is that a rail strike at this point would be a disaster. I mean, a complete disaster for the American economy. So I can certainly understand from an economic standpoint, people wanting to do whatever they can to stop this strike. But from a union standpoint, I can understand the union saying, hey, wait a minute. This is our negotiation. Stay out of this. This is our negotiation. So it's a tough call. It's a tough call. It's a difficult call. And we'll see how it plays out. But no question that a strike would be devastating to the economy. That's no question about that. But can the government do this? Can the government get in there and tell a union what it has to accept or what it has to do? A private union? I don't know. I don't think so. That may be tested in the courts, and we may be back to another set of appeals and judges telling the government that they cannot do this. But as I said before, the other side, the rail strike, would be devastating to say the least. Well, there's once again a problem with the Arizona election. I'm not up to speed on everything that happened in Arizona, but there is lots of people in Arizona who feel that cheating took place, particularly in Maricopa County, which is where 60% of the people live, or that area. They live in Arizona. And I don't know whether cheating took place or not. I honestly don't know. There are apparently some counties who don't want to certify their election votes because they feel that cheating did take place in Maricopa. I'm not up to speed on it, but I will tell you this. States like Arizona, New Mexico, have got to clean up the way they count votes. The idea that we're still counting votes, even in California, there's one district, we're still counting votes. That is ridiculous in the 21st century. This is 2022. This is not, you know, the 19th century where they had to send a fellow with a bag of ballots over to another place and It took several days to get there. This is not what we're talking about here. We've got all kinds of machinery where it can be done instantly. But I think what's happening in Arizona and many other places is that they've tried to make voting so easy that they've actually made it difficult. Because there's so many different ways of voting. You know, you can vote obviously on election day, which is the way we always used to vote. Now you can vote early, but now you can vote by mail. And now you can put a ballot in the mail on the day of the election. Now you can put a ballot in the mail at 1 minute before the election day is over. And so that kind of delays everything. That kind of delays everything. I like the way we do it in Texas. I wish more states would adopt what we have in Texas, where you get 2 weeks of early voting, two whole weeks, Monday through Sunday. Even Sunday in the afternoons you can vote here. And you get 2 weeks of early voting. You go down to wherever you're going to vote. You show your identification. You vote, and you're home free. And it's very easy. It takes 2 minutes. Even when there's heavy turnout, it's a very easy process. And you get it over with. And on election day, all those votes get counted, you know, right away because they're in the machine already. All they got to do is push a button, and they get the results. We also have in Texas absentee ballots. I mean, if you're going to be out of town or physically you cannot vote or whatever, they'll provide you with a ballot that you can mail in. But, you know, obviously you have to sign an affidavit confirming who you are and everything else. But, the system in Texas is the same as the system in Florida. And in most other places, you get your results by 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. But in California, we're still counting votes in a district, not the state, in a district. We're still counting votes. I mean, that's just plainly ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So again, I don't know whether there was something fishy in Arizona. It does look to me like a lot of machines broke down. They ran out of paper in some places. How do you run out of paper on election day? I mean, how do you run out of ballots on election day? I mean, how do you do that? I mean, it would seem to me that if there is one day of the year where you have an excess of ballots, it would be on election day. But, you know, many Republicans feel cheated because most Republicans vote on election day. So, again, I'm not saying that cheating occurred or didn't occur. I just think these states need to clean up their act. They need to clean up their act. There's no excuse in the world why we should not have results by 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock local time. I'm sorry, there's just no way. And if people cannot vote on election day and people cannot vote early, well, then they're going to have to figure out some other way of voting. But this idea that you can vote after the election, as happens in some places, no. That is completely crazy, and that's what complicates things. And that also is what gives voting a bad name and why so many Americans feel that there's a problem with voting. So it's not just Trump. I mean, a lot of people want to blame it on Trump. This is not Trump. This is a lot of states and a lot of districts who need to do a better job of counting their votes to at least live up to the responsibility of counting their votes on time. Now, in Arizona, you got another problem, and that is the Democrat governor, candidate for governor, was the Secretary of State. So the person running for governor is the same person responsible for counting the votes. I have no idea how they got away with that, but that complicates the problem a little bit. Well, we want to say rest in peace today to Gaylord Perry, who passed away today. He was a great pitcher for about 20 years or so in the major leagues. He won over 300 games. He won the Cy Young two times, and he was well known for the spitball. He was supposed to throw a spitball, and he had a lot of batters confused with that. Whether he did it or not, I don't know. But he certainly had a lot of batters confused with his spitball. But he was a great pitcher. I saw him several times pitch. And I tell you, he threw a lot of innings. He kept you in the game because he threw a lot of innings. And he was a real competitor, Gaylord Perry. His brother Jim was also a pitcher with the Minnesota Twins, and a pretty good one too with the Minnesota Twins. So rest in peace, Gaylord Perry, one of my all-time favorites when it comes to baseball pitchers. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.